Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for inviting me. It was Hazel. You're Hazel? Yeah, there you go. I didn't even know I was speaking to you. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. So, I want to start speaking about the scriptures. I think we all really know the story of David and Goliath and the other things that happened in David's life as well. And they weren't all good, were they? Let's face it. He fell flat in his face quite a few times. So when I asked the Lord, what should I say to these people this morning? Eventually, I was just sitting there one morning and bang, it just came. And he said, write. And so I've written what he has said, okay? Is it the time when you should be walking in the fullness of the plan that Father God has for your life? Remember, age is never a consideration when God plans things. When you think of Abraham and people like that, you know, they started very late in life. Have you ever thought about it, really? Prayed about it? Dabbled in it occasionally? Sort of stuck your toe in the water? Put the arch of your foot over the edge of the cliff, as it appears, that God has prompted you to step off of? He's a good, good Father. I think we all agree with that. Who has only our really best interests at heart. He knows the best path for each of us. There are many paths, but he knows the best one and will always direct us to it. Put this down a bit. Is that better? Okay. And not only does he know the best path, but he will, if we allow it and if we're listening, he prepares and equips us to walk in that path. You know, if God is speaking to you, and as I say, age is no barrier to God speaking to us, let's face it, or if he's wanting us to do something. If you're unsure, speak to your leadership. Leadership, of course, also speak to others that are more mature Christians themselves, perhaps. Is God speaking to me about this? It could be something quite small in the scheme of things, but it's not small for your life. Okay? And therefore, in God's kingdom, it's not a small thing. He's specifically asked you about this thing. But always get confirmation. Above all, spend more time than usual, you know, quality time, alone with Jesus. Read the scriptures that the Holy Spirit will drop into your mind, and he will. And look for God to speak directly into your own situation. And then prepare to be amazed. That happened with my daughter just yesterday. She was in desperation and just left the whole situation and went up to her room and just got before the Lord, declared things, and within 1 hour, something came right through. And it was a really simple thing, but it changed the whole nature of the situation. Yeah, we just have to be receptive, really. So what has all this got to do with MAF, Mission Aviation Fellowship? Well, it has everything to do with it, really. Every person that works in MAF, including volunteers like myself, have all had a call from God to do what we are doing, and we've had it confirmed. The verse that I actually wrote down first of all was 1 Samuel 17:33, where Saul, actually it's a little bit further on from where we were, where the reading was, but that nicely set the scene, thank you. David said that he would actually go and fight this Goliath, and Saul, who was the king, said to him, "You can't come fight this Philistine. Put on my armor, you know, you're only a youth, and he's an experienced man of war." And we know about him putting on the armor, and he couldn't wear the armor because it was too heavy. It wasn't suitable for him. And David says, "I've killed lions and bears, so you know this Philistine will be just like one of those to me, seeing that he has defied," and this has obviously come up twice, "that he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord," this is his declaration, "the Lord will deliver me just as he has before." That's faith. We all want that sort of faith, don't we? But, you know, like someone in the Gospels said, Lord, increase my faith. And the Lord will deliver me just as he has before, whether it was fighting lions and bears or whatever. So Saul, the king, did actually give David his blessing. Oh, yeah, well, okay, off you go type of thing. So that really confirmed what David believed that the Lord was telling him to do. And so, and then we think about the other things that happened in Saul's life. And we know some of them weren't good, but a lot of them were good. But through everything in his life, he would run back to the Lord on his face. I've got it wrong again. You know, forgive me. You're my father, etc. So the things that I wanted to sort of like be drawn out of this, and this is not original from me, but it's obviously God has allowed me to use it, is, first of all, never wear a set of clothes that someone else has given you, or like, it could be a title that they've given you, or you might be good at a particular thing. Use what God has given you. Yeah, we have natural giftings, and we have gifts that God bestows on us, for want of a better expression. And you know, they're the ones we need to use, because, again, he knows us best, and he gives us what is best for us to do what he wants us to do with. Recognize what your Goliath looks like. In the reading, he was, you know, his height and weight and size and everything was actually listed there. You know, God never has these details put in without purpose. There's always a reason for it, and it was just to see how big it all is. But what does your Goliath look like? What does your Goliath look like? Could be anything, but it's personal to you. The one thing that's really big, but that you can overcome when you have the faith and you're listening to what the strategy that God is giving you. Let your past equip you for your future. Use all your knowledge and your experiences of the past. You don't make the same mistake twice type of thing, isn't it? As much as anything else. So, you know, use it for good for your future. And don't let adversity deter you from that future either. Things can be very difficult. You know, we all know the mess-ups that David did. But this still didn't deter him from going on and from bringing God glory and wanting to do what actually God was, the plans that had for him. And something else about David was he was always real with God. Always real. He didn't try to hide. He just told it to God as it was, because that's the only way, because he knows anyway. You know, we can't fool him. And so it's really, really important to be honest, because when we're being honest with him, we're actually being honest with ourselves, out of the mouth and in the ears type of thing, isn't it? You know? So, yeah, do this. And something else that David did, he laid himself bare before the Lord. And in part of the story, he was quite undignified when he was so joyful about bringing the ark back that he danced in his underwear, I think, or something like that, the scripture goes, doesn't it? But that meant was nothing. All he thought about was he was bringing back the ark of God. And that was such an amazing thing to him. He didn't think about himself. He wasn't important. Don't let a challenge become a reason to stop. If you believe that you're on the path that God has set you on, don't let things put you off. Challenges are just challenges. They're not brick walls, you know, because nothing is impossible for God. As far as MAF is concerned, every pilot, engineer, director, working or manager, working on an MAF program has been prepared for that role. Firstly, by God, life's experiences and teaching and training that they've had. Prayer, so important, prayer. And as they've applied to MAF, MAF will continue to prepare them to see if they are ready to be able to go out and serve in these incredibly difficult circumstances that we work in. And of course, it's not just them, it could be their family as well. Everything has to be prepared. internally as well as the external things. Anybody, by the way, who wants to know more about even part-time service with MAF, just phone Folkestone and they'll put you in touch with a person who would know where your talents, may be able to be used, even if it's short-term. So you all know about MAF to a certain extent, I believe, yes? Is there anybody not heard of MAF at all? Just the one. We were formed in 1950 from a vision that God gave pilots and engineers serving during the last World War. It started in America, in Australasia, and in the UK, all sort of at the same time, really. And the vision is to bring spiritual hope and practical help to people living in very isolated areas of our world. And we do that by partnering other agencies. It could be Christian Blind Mission, Wycliffe, Bible Translators, disaster relief people, the UN Disaster Relief Commissions. We will fly them into an area where there's maybe been a natural disaster, and then they will put their big plan into action. There is a myriad of things that we do, and I haven't got time to tell you here this morning. So a little bit about MAF itself. I hope that the things that I've said is not very much, but I hope that it does resonate at least with one person in this room. If it resonates with one person in this room this morning, then I've been obedient and someone's been blessed by that. So what has MAF been up to? Well, excuse me. One of the new services that we were asked to provide several years ago now was in Myanmar, the old Burma. And the government at the time didn't want to know, Myanmar government. But there were agencies that were trying to work there or wanting to send people in, and they wouldn't send them in because MAF was not there. Many, many agencies will not send their people in if MAF is not available, because they know that not only can we get their personnel and their resources in safely, but also if there's trouble, we can get them out as well. Or if there's some sort of medical emergency, we can fly them out. So after months of traveling with government officials on very dangerous mountain roads, because obviously it's a very mountainous place, and there's lots and lots of landslides that kill people on a regular basis because they don't have all the well-built roads and safety fences and things that we have in this country and in the Western world. They've been surveying potential areas where we could perhaps construct an airstrip. And it has actually culminated in a plan of action this time. The Myanmar government is on board, and the aviation authority has been going around with MAF. And before too long, people living in remote mountain areas and villages will at last have proper access, access to education, medical assistance, and everything else that can go with that. The gospel, a host of initiatives that will improve their lives as we begin flying in partner agencies with their particular area of expertise. I mean, they could be agriculturalists, they could be veterinary people, they could be medical staff that will do, like rotary doctors, who will actually do sort of like a medical safari. They'll go from one district to another being flown and treat hundreds of people at a time. And then they go back to their business in somewhere in Europe, for the rest of the year. It's wonderful. We are also in Nepal. We've never had a base in Nepal, but after the first earthquake that happened, the disaster response team that we now have, who have vast expertise between them, they flew out there to say, is there anything that we can do to help? And it was impossible, of course, to fly aircraft there, because it's very, very mountainous, shale country as well. And with the landslides, it rose that had been there were gone, many, many of them were gone. Excuse me. But what we did, we decided that because of the expertise that we've got, we could help the Nepali people, and we hired two helicopters from a Fishtail, I think they're called, Fishtail Corporation. And we, the first day that we opened an office there, there was a queue of agencies that were wanting to use our services. And they hadn't even got started, but word had got around that we were there, and so they come flooding in. And so we were already there before the second earthquake struck, and that just reiterated, really, that, yeah, we, there's lots that can be done here. And so the UK government have made us members of DFID, you know, the overseas disaster sort of team that they have from here, and they gave us some UK aid, and with the Nepali government's confirmation, we are now setting up a base for 5 years there, and we are helping. I have got some figures, I think, here in Nepal. Yes. Disaster response in Nepal in the first 9 months, we were flying every 13 minutes. We helped 11 different districts. 91 NGOs and aid agencies were served. And it's only a little country, you know. But people, some are already in there, and others will, they know they can help, given the right circumstances and the, obviously the permission to go into that country. So there's over 300 locations served. We've carried out 6,455 flights, over 7,000 passengers, and over a million kilos of cargo in two little helicopters. You know, imagine what we could do if we could have got planes in and out. So anyway, we would very much value your prayers there, because we are really seeking God on whether we should be setting up some sort of semi-permanence. It's going to be at least 5 years. Organisation to use helicopters, or whether in fact we can use fixed-wing aircraft, as it's all still quite new. You know, we're still in the throes of doing all that. We always, always will value your prayers on everything. And South Sudan. South Sudan, for the lady who hadn't heard anything about MAF, was the country that we very first started serving in 1950 with one aircraft. And for the gentleman around here, it was a Dragon Rapide. It's a twin-winged aircraft. And today we have about 135 light aircraft of varying sizes. We're serving in over about 30 countries of the world now, in the developing world. So in South Sudan, we're very well established since the official end of the war. I've actually been out there. It's about 18 months after the end of the war, and it's just total devastation. Everything destroyed, the hospitals, the police stations. And so having to build up from nothing when you have nothing is extremely difficult. But they have great will to rebuild their country. And lots of agencies are in there because MAF is based there. But, you know, the persistence of rebel fighting is still causing much unrest. And there's about 2 million people displaced. And this means that even if their food crops had been destroyed by fire or just been ruined by fighters, or the severe drought, of course, which they have also been suffering now. I think it was on the TV not long ago, wasn't it? About the plight of them. The farmers and their families, herdsmen, of course, a lot of them are herdsmen because they're Maasai, they've had to flee just their lives and whatever they can carry. And now many of them are starving. Well, Pilot Wim Hobo, I don't know where he's from, it's a rather unusual name. He's based in Juba, which is the capital of South Sudan, and he has to drive past a huge field each day. And since July last year, it's become sort of an unofficial refugee camp. Every day he's, you know, passing about 1,000 men, women and children in desperate need. And this is just on his drive to the airport to pick up his plane to go flying off somewhere to help other people. And it was really on his heart that, you know, if there was help needed here, like we see our neighbours at home, you know, there's a need next door, as it were. And he didn't know what he could do. So he spoke to Moses, which was one of MAF's local dispatchers, to say, you know, what can we actually do to help these people? So Moses went and talked to them, and they said, we need medicine, food and water. So Wim and Moses, privately, they purchased 4 water tanks with a total capacity of 1,500 litres. And there are water trucks that go by each day on there out to different camps and different areas. And he stopped one of the water trucks and paid him to fill these 4 tanks and said, please come back next day. I will pay you. Just please come and fill the tanks for the people. And he didn't stop. And so Wim said to Moses, why would this be? And he said, well, they're probably afraid because some refugees can get a bit aggressive, you know, when they're so desperate. And but anyway, he finally got one of these water truck drivers to stop, and they were paying him out of their own pockets for 2-3 weeks. And then, small beginnings, you see, God increases the faithfulness. The Red Cross comes into it, and they built showers, toilets, and an even larger water tank to meet the camp's needs. And I have to presume that they actually paid for the water to be delivered as well. But if it hadn't, you know, it was so much laid on his heart, he did what he could, but God blesses things. And it's like our giving, you know, we give, but Jesus will bless it and multiply it. And that help was multiplied far more than those people the pilot could have ever done on his own. And this is just one of the many ways that our staff do go the extra mile to help meet the needs of, in this case, South Sudan's people. You know, it's the love of God compels us. One of the apostles said that, I can't remember who it was in the gospel. The love of Christ compels us to keep doing, keep helping. For those of you that are not familiar with mass work, here's a film that will be a bit more interesting than hearing me drone on about some of our partner agencies and how they rely on MAF to reach areas where they know that they are needed and are trying to work to help vulnerable people, bringing, as I've said before, practical help and spiritual hope to thousands for whom flying is not a luxury, but an absolute lifeline.
Okay. We need MAF.
Math is essential to the work of MEDAIR.
Math flies them in, and often flies them home again.
And if we could get an aeroplane in here and get people a decent medical attention as quick as we could, then that gives us a lot of comfort.
We need MAF.
Math is essential to the work of MEDAIR.
Math flies them in.
I'm Lizzie Wood, I work for MEDAIR in the DR Congo. We support rural health clinics, bridge rehabilitation sites and community water projects throughout the northeast region. The distances are vast between the different areas, the roads are limited, the whole region is covered in thick jungle. MAF is essential to the work of MEDAIR. If we weren't able to fly between our different bases, fly to get to these rural health clinics, we wouldn't be able to do our work, we wouldn't be able to reach vulnerable people, we wouldn't be able to respond to outbreaks of diseases. It would be impossible to function.
So one of our challenges as a clinic here is to make access to cesarean a reality. And to do that, we need MAF to be able to get to our peripheral clinics, to be able to get there fast enough that a mom can get there and get back within a few hours. More women will get a cesarean, and less women will have to die without it.
My eye patients
Because of MAF, I'm able to get way up into the northeast of the country where travel by car would take me weeks.
First of all, my name is Thierry. I'm the head of mission of MSF Suisse here based in Bunia. Thanks to MAF, we are able to transport our expatriates and national staff to the different locations where we are working.
We've got a tall stick and a short stick here. This indicates that we have an anti-tank mine, 5 or 6 kilos of high explosive, with an anti-personnel mine underneath. Now that's particularly dangerous. An anti-personnel mine only really needs the weight of a person to set it off. You can have a person step on this, huge explosion. It'll wipe out a lot of people. Anybody standing around it will be wiped out by that.
If we, God forbid, have an accident in the minefields, then, you know, it's a long, long drive back to Wambo. It's a full day's drive. And if we could get an aeroplane in here and get people to decent medical attention as quick as we could, then that gives us a lot of comfort, really.
Has anybody got any questions? Yes. Okay. Well, I know it's a bit unusual in the service, but you know, you are at liberty to ask questions because I want you to understand what we do. As you saw there, there's Medicine Sans Frontières and people like that. We all got to know about them when Ebola broke out in Liberia, which is another one of our new programs, actually. We were partway through all the paper processes of going into Liberia when Ebola broke out, and so all that stopped until Ebola was broken. And so it was about 6 months after that we started, and I think we've got 2 aircraft there now, and 2 or 3 families, and the people of Liberia are very, very happy, because people can get back and forth to hospital, and again, missions, churches, and different agencies can get where they need to go to bring people, to bring help to people. I'd like to tell you just a couple of stories, really, thinking about, one thing I had wanted to say was, you were speaking about the Good Samaritan, and you prayed, yes. And someone had said that MAF's planes are like the Samaritan's donkey. You know, the people are on board, the Samaritan itself is on board the plane, and the plane's the donkey. So I can drop a little picture there for you. We, as you saw in that, at the end of that clip, it's about 1,500 different agencies will use us. And that will be from the UN Disaster Relief Commissioners, as I've already mentioned, all the way through international churches, national churches, Bible societies, the World Wildlife Fund use us. We've carried a baby orangutan and a catfish and camel medicine, all sorts of things, besides personnel who may be going out to teach and train herdsmen and better husbandry practices and things like that for their animals, so they can get more out of them, like we can more over here, in the circumstances that they're living in there. Anything that's going to give them practical help to be self-sufficient, because that's all anybody really wants to be. They don't want to rely on aid. They want to get their education. They don't want to be gathering food every day. They want education and want their life to be better. And so that's what most of the agencies will do, is to help them improve their lives and become independent. While I was out in South Sudan, there was a group of men sitting under a tree, and a chap was talking to them about this and that, and I was told that he was an engineer and a welder, was his particular trade, and some charity or other, some church, had got together the means to send over lots of ploughs, metal ploughs. Now, there were two distinct lots, because I went somewhere else and there were more ploughs set that had been donated in there. One set were just, they were given the ploughs, there we are, bye-bye, be blessed. But the group that I was seeing, being taught, etc., they were being taught that if it breaks, how to put it together, to how to assemble it to begin with, and if a part breaks, how to disassemble it, replace that part, or repair that part. You know, that's self-sufficiency. And that's what people need. World Vision, a few years ago now, were working in with the widows of South Sudan, of which there are many, many millions of widows, of course, and they were struggling to survive, but they were breeding chickens, and they were very, very scrawny chickens, very poor egg layers, and the World Vision teams that were trying to work on this widows program spoke with World Vision head office and said, can we not provide them with a better breed of chicken that would be better egg layers, maybe have a bit more meat on them, but be resilient to the conditions that they're going to be living in. And so, you know, people all over the world, they donate to things like World Vision because it's very big and well advertised. And so it was that over a three-month period, MAF were flying up 10,000 day-old chicks from Uganda into South Sudan and into these different districts where there were this program was being instituted by World Vision. And it was very, very successful. And they did it again about 2 years later, I do believe. But if you think about it, that could never, ever have happened if they couldn't have been flown in, because they'd have perished within probably 2 or 3 hours on roads that are not roads and in the heat. I mean, it was 45 degrees when I was out there. And the only shelter is under the wings of the aircraft, unless you're in some sort of a building. And, you know, and it's the same with opticians' delicate equipment. And they do hundreds and hundreds of cataract operations and different operations to help people regain their sight. Because in these poor countries, someone who hasn't got their sight means that unless someone else, usually a small child, is left with them and taken out of the workers' team, they fall in the fire and they get hurt, and no one wants this. But of course, to be given back their sight means that that adult and that young person can be back out working again to help the community. So it's a real double whammy. And some of these medical people will work with like a miner's lamp on, 14 hours they'll walk, work and see as many, many patients as they can. And when people, because a lot of these are medical safaris that are actually quite regular, then the people will walk for up to maybe 3 days from a village because they know that the plane is coming and will bring the help that they need. And it works. It's been working for the best part of 70 years, the practical side. It really does work. Nothing that we do, though, is without prayer. And obviously, I flew with MAF out in Sudan. And every time before that pilot, who is highly experienced, takes off, he will pray. He will ask for Jesus to be there, to be his guide, to be his wisdom and his reactions, etc., etc. He, although he's very highly qualified, he does not want to rely on himself. You know, we say, yeah, I know how to do this. He always will ask. And he could be taking off and landing 10 times in a day, but he'll never do it without prayer. You see, he always wants to be reliant on God. You know, we're based on prayer. And as some of you will probably know, we actually produce a prayer diary. 4 times a year we produce a magazine which tells you it's got lots of amazing stories about people, about situations that God is moving in. But the prayer diary is what a lot of people have this for. And in it, there is something or someone or a situation to pray for each day, or, as in my case, where the Holy Spirit prompts me to pick it up and open it. It'll either be on a date or I'll just open it and I will read about something. But I know that that's been God's leading for me that day on that. But these come just four times a year, and they are free. Everything that we want you to have from MAF is free, because we want you to make more people aware. We want you to pray for us and be involved, be part of the family. So if anyone would like those, I've got a little form here. If you just put your contact details, I send that off, and you will get these just four times a year. And you will not, like Premier Christian Radio, sad to say, keep on being hounded for money because they're in crisis. Very, very sad. But that's not the way that MAF works. But I know of, there have been two times when they have actually sent a letter out to known supporters, and that was when we had price hikes in the price of oil. It just a few years ago now absolutely shot up, and people couldn't get to work because the price was oil was so much, the price of petrol had gone up. And of course that was the same for us. We had budgeted for what we needed for that particular month, for all that we needed to do, and we were £365,000 now short of what we needed just to fulfil the commitments that we already had. So they sent this letter out, and over £1 million came in. That's how much people know the benefits for those living in isolated areas will get from that continuing service. 12,000 nautical miles every day we fly. Fly to more destinations than any airline. But they're small destinations. We don't fly on the same airstrips all the time. It could be once a year. It might not have been used for 4 or 5 years, and people are setting up some medical centre or something like that, and the agency's saying, you know, can you fly us in and out? And it's, well, go and survey by land, and it maybe have to be refurbished. If you think about it, it's extremely complicated to fly in these areas. Someone has to be responsible for maintaining the airstrips, because in hot countries, weeds and bushes and things grow very quickly. It's bad enough here, isn't it, at the moment? And, you know, so they have to be maintained so that the runway or the airstrip, as it is safe. So we need some people on the ground, not MAF people, but people who maybe we're serving. It could be local community leaders or whoever, but someone has to be made responsible. There are places where we have fuel dumps, these big 50-gallon barrels of aviation fuels, because it's pretty volatile, especially in 45 degrees. And we have to know that's in a safe place. And the pilot has to plan what his needs are before he leaves his base. All the district hopping he will do. He has to weigh everything. Everything. You have to tell him what your weight is. Be honest, because it all has to go into the calculation as to how far he can get on the fuel that he's got because of the weight that he's carrying. And it's so complex, but it works. We have the capabilities and it works. I'll tell you another story. In some of the places you may not know, particularly the lady who's not heard of MAF before, we're in places like, goodness, it's just escaped me. Right in the middle of the Central Massif, Mongolia. We fly in Mongolia. It's a third world country. And the distances are massive. We fly the church. We fly medical teams, we fly like physiotherapy teams that come in from different areas. We will take their patients in, and they will be taught and trained how to maybe give physiotherapy to children who've got deformed limbs or something like that, fly them back home again, all sorts of things. We fly in Indonesian islands, Madagascar. As I said, we will start in Nepal, Even in Arnhem Land, which is in North Australia, it's the Aboriginal territories, and you wouldn't think that we would be flying in Australia. And up there for the Lutheran Church, they were very big in helping the peoples in Arnhem Land. They have drawn back a lot of their resources, and the Aboriginal chiefs begged MAF to continue flying for them, because we would do it through the Lutheran Church. But then they asked us to continue flying. And to do so, they bought us 7 aircraft. Caravans, Cessna Caravans, and 208s and things like this. And we served them up there. It's quite a big program. Lots of African countries, of course. We're in Ecuador, which is where it started on the American side. Mexico. We're in Brazil. Places like Brazil and Mongolia, we have to have a sort of a corporate name. We're not allowed to be missionaries as such, because Brazil is not a third world country, but they need our services. So we're sort of, I don't know what the name it is. I know in Mongolia it's Blue Sky Aviation. Going back to Australia and Arnhem Land, there's when you go have your tea and coffee, I've got a display up there and some books. And one of the books has got called Eyes Turn Skyward. And there's some amazing stories in there. This chap used to be a jet fighter pilot in the Australian Air Force, and he ended up flying for MAF. And on one of his flights, it was all cargo, no passengers, and most of our planes you can take with the seats out. And one of the things he had was a 50-gallon barrel of German red wine, which is to serve the Lutheran churches up in Arnhem Land. I think you know the story, do you? Oh, right. Yes, quite. And as if they haven't got enough problems. the alcohol is not helpful. And anyway, so small planes can't fly through cloud systems. If there's going to be any turbulence at all, they fly above it, below it, or around it. And there was a bad weather system coming up, so radio for permission to go to 10,000 feet, where he knew he would be safe. Got the permission, put his oxygen mask on, and started ascending. And he was just flying along there, doing his own thing, and suddenly he heard bang, followed by glug, 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 glug. And then he realised that the lack of air pressure had allowed the bung to come out of this huge cask of red wine, and it was filling his airframe and trailing out pink behind. He saw the funny side of it, but his boss didn't. Yes, another one of his stories. It's such a wonderful book. They should make a film of that one. Spiritually speaking, it's very good too. He again, was just carrying cargo, mainly again from the Lutheran Church. They have an agricultural college, and I think that's one of the big ways in which they were helping the Aboriginal tribes up there. And he was asked to carry 2 live heifers in his aircraft, his light aircraft. And he wasn't at all happy about this, but he was told he had to take them. And so they tied their legs, and they laid them on soft canvases and things so that they were comfortable. And there was other cargo packed around and what have you. So off he took. And they started to get restless quite quickly, as you can imagine. Young things having their legs tied up, and where am I? And he thought, I can't risk anything here. I know what I'll do. Got permission to ascend to 10,000 feet again. And as he did, the heifers were put to sleep because of the lack of oxygen. He had his mask on, was fully in control, but they went to sleep. And as he descended to near his destination, so they came awake again, and everybody arrived safely. You never know. There are millions and millions of stories that we could relate to you. Some of them, of course, are in the books, as I say, that are out there. But it's Eyes Turned Skyward. I would thoroughly recommend it. And the print's big enough to read at home, in bed. Two other things, if I could just mention. Raising funds for MAF. Raising funds is never easy. We're all having difficulties keeping our money go around. But 2 of the things that we do, apart from collecting postcards, I don't know whether you know about collecting postcards. Well, I've got a picture of a chap called Reverend Ken Tom. He's the minister at the URC Baptist in Tiptree. And he's a postcard collector, is his hobby. And he, over the years, has started, people like me will come and tell people like you, if you don't want your postcards anymore, if they're used with the stamps still intact, or unused ones, you can give them to Math, phone up and what have you. I can give you a box to collect them in so you can leave them for people to drop them in. He sorts them and then he sells them on the internet. And last year, in 2015, he raised £27,000 in 1 year. And nobody put their hands in their pockets, you know? And altogether, they reckon he's raised about £180,000, which is incredible. So it's a wonderful way to serve. So do bear that in mind. And the other ways are Bake Off to Take Off or Coffee Morning. But we call it Bake Off to Take Off. And Frying for Life, as opposed to Flying for Life. Breakfast. Everybody seems to be doing breakfast these days. Mixed, or men's or ladies. We produce these packs, again, totally free, to help you organise your coffee morning or organise your breakfast. We'll do everything we can to help you, make it easier for you, because you're willing to do it. We're very happy about that. And so if anybody's interested in doing anything like this or about the postcards, please come and speak to me later. Okay? Thank you so much for listening. And any questions, please, please, please do speak to me. Okay? God bless you all. Thank you.